It's time for a solid hour of business insights and strategies for success on Mind Your Business. And here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing, Yitzhak Saflis.
Welcome to Mind Your Business on 77 WABC Radio in the greater New York metropolitan area. I'm Greg Greenberg, sitting in for the great Yitzhak Saflis, who's taking a break for the holidays. You might also be listening on mybradio.com if you're not on terrestrial radio, or perhaps on the C-Suite Network, which broadcasts all over the world online, and on Apple and Amazon and Roku and all those other places millennials are watching because they don't watch TV anymore like I did when I was their age. To be young and computer literate. Anyway, Yitzhak generally starts his radio show by thanking his listeners for their trust and support week in, week out. So I'm going to do the same thing and thank you in advance as well. Thanks to James and Carvalho for making us feel welcome up here and the engineers for fixing any mistakes they may have. And thanks again for Yitzhak and the folks at WABC Radio for letting me keep his seat warm while he is out, and this is certainly an honor. Now, as a rule, Yitzhak, as you know, has top-notch guests inviting, and they're giving unmatched business advice on his show. He does it week in, week out. Check out the website, and you'll be able to see what I'm talking about. You can see all his guests there. And at least on that score, I don't think I'm disappointing today. My guest today is Luther Garcia, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about Luther Garcia before we bring him on, because he really does below the curve. Thanks a lot, Luther.
Thank you, Greg.
And excuse me. So Luther has served as the president and CEO of ECS Global since he led its acquisition by Finergy Global in the summer of 2013. And before that, he served as the CEO of and the co-founder, look at you, of Finergy USA. Before that, he was a partner in Globant, where he helped deliver $50 million in sales. From 2003 to 2005, Luther was the global head of technical architecture for lastminute.com. That's generally when I arrive, so we'll talk about that in a second. And before that, he was a founding partner of Sophos Partners. Before that, he was VP of Engineering and co-founder at Gray Peak Technologies. That's a network integration technology company. That got sold to US Web for $100 million back in 1998. That sounds like one of those big internet transactions when a lot of companies were flying here and there. And before then, he was doing technical security and network consulting to some big companies and investment banks. The reason why he was doing network security is because before that, this guy has certainly lived a life, he was a cryptologist for the Naval Security Group at the National Security Agency, where he participated in a number of combat missions during Operations Desert Shield and Desert Storm. He certainly blows the curve. Welcome, Luther Garcia.
Thank you, Greg. Thanks for having me.
All right. We're going to talk a lot over this next hour about the many things you've done.
Sure.
But I want to start last things first. So tell me about your service as a cryptologist at the NSA. You're a codebreaker. That's pretty cool.
You know, it all started when I was a senior in high school. And, you know, Spanish, French, German, these are very common languages that they offer in high school. But I went to one of the only schools, and I'm from Albuquerque, New Mexico originally, that offered Russian. So I was studying Russian just because I thought it's different. So, you know, these naval recruiters basically came into our Russian class in my senior year, and they said how they need these Russian linguists. They made it sound like we'd be like James Bond. It sounded so cool. This is about 1988. So I joined the Navy. And they give you this test to see if you have an aptitude for learning languages, and it's basically in a made-up language that has sort of aspects of every language on, you know, on Earth. So, you know, sometimes there's masculine, feminine, and some languages have neuter, there's declension, there's all these different concepts. And it's this made-up language, and at the end of it, sort of people are talking in this made-up language, not doing anything descriptive, and you have to figure out what they're saying. And it's just 2 minutes. You have 2 minutes for each sort of exercise. So I guess I qualified for a Category 5 language. And the Cold War was also kind of ending a bit. So I got stuck with Arabic instead. So that was actually very scary because I went to language school. And they teach you this language. In my case, they taught me Arabic in a year. And if you fail out, you end up in the real Navy, which is not what not what I really wanted.
I have the theme from James Bond playing in my head now. Keep going. I want to find out how you go all the way through to ECS, but this is cool.
Yeah. No, it wasn't nearly as glamorous as it may sound. But anyway, so I went through a bunch of training. They teach you all sorts of things about military and, you know, battle and war and all these kinds of things. You have to be to the point where I could actually listen to an intercept of an Iraqi pilot or some pilot speaking Arabic, and I could tell which dialect he was speaking. I could tell you what plane he was flying based on the checklist he was going through, you know, like a MiG-23, these flaps up, flaps down, and the whole thing, all this kind of stuff. And I ended up getting stationed at the National Security Agency, and I finished all of my schooling and training in the summer of, 1990. And then on August 6th or August 2nd, Saddam Hussein basically invaded Kuwait. And yeah, it was August 2nd, I think, and I was gone August 6th. So it's basically from the beginning to the end of that war, which didn't last that long, luckily.
We beat him pretty quick in that one.
We really did. So I was involved.
It was the aftermath that took a while.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's how you started in security. And a quick question I want to find out. Clearly, we're going to be talking a lot about ECS, your company, in a little bit. But when you build intelligent buildings at ECS, do you make sure they have cybersecurity in them, that they can't be hacked? Because, you know, you're a code breaker, so you got to make sure that the Internet of Things in the homes that you build cannot be hacked by the Russians.
It's really funny that you mention that, because it's absolutely true. The Internet of Things basically means that we are IP enabling all sorts of things. Like it's a fan, an air handler, a VAV. Everything can be IP enabled, so we can communicate with it. We can get analytics from it. We can control it. Now these computer networks that you would find in a bank or any corporation, we actually have to build them now to manage, you know, air conditioning and thermostats and light fixtures. So yeah, they absolutely have to be secured, and it's best if they're sort of isolated and not connected to whatever the internal network is. Like in a bank, for example, and we have several banks that are our customers, they have their own IT security, so you sort of have to fit into whatever they have, and usually you'll have a network that's separate. That's just for the devices. And in fact, there was a really big hack in Target a few years ago where there was over 1 million credit card numbers that were compromised. And the way they got in was through the BMS system, which is the building management system of the air conditioning.
You're going to have to use big words. You can't use acronyms on this show. You're going to lose me and everyone driving, you know, on the Brooklyn Queens Expressway. All right, so let's take another step back. All right, I had to ask you about the code breaking, because that's just way too cool. You know, that's James Bondian. So tell me about the company, ECS, what you do, why it's so important in this increasingly wired world. You know, let's start with energy. You know, you cut down people's energy bills, right? How do you do it?
Right. So the biggest thing we do is we replace energy consuming devices with things that are more energy efficient. So whether it's lighting, we use LED lighting, we add controls to it with HVAC systems or
heating. Oh, that's an acronym. HVAC. What is that? Heating?
Yeah, so it's heating and air conditioning.
All right, there you go.
Anything for cooling.
Venting, right? The V is the venting?
Yeah,
venting.
All right. Yeah. So anything for heating and cooling a building, we basically can make more efficient and control it. So imagine if we had one building, for example, that was about 800,000 square feet, and it had 3,500 electrical heating pumps with no controls. So imagine that. That's a huge amount of energy that's being consumed in the winter, when if you controlled it, you can actually reduce the energy consumption by about 40% for those specific devices. So it's a combination of what we do is through building automation and installing energy efficient measures and upgrades, we help make these buildings more efficient from a energy demand standpoint, as well as more efficient to operate, manage, and maintain.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you about the grid. You know, for a long time, we kept hearing about the failing grid. We had that big blackout. I think that was about 15 years ago, that big blackout.
Yeah,
but, at that time, we kept hearing about the grid. And then during the election, we kept hearing about infrastructure and the failing grid. Tell me about the grid.
Yeah. So on the northeastern seaboard in particular, and New York City, there is more demand for electricity than there is electricity. So the other thing is there's a nuclear power plant called at Indian Point.
Sure.
And that really probably puts about 40% of the electricity in New York City, and they've been trying to shut it down for years. They want to shut it down now by, I think, 2020. So everything that's going on, there's a huge, huge effort and huge waves of energy-efficient upgrades and projects, whether it's going to be a new construction thing or whether it's going back to older buildings.
How do you work with the energy providers? Now, I grew up with Lilco on Long Island. It's not Lilco anymore. But so how do you work with Con Ed and the energy providers all along the East Coast?
Yeah, so we work with.
I mean, if you're cutting down bills, you're taking money out of their pockets. So you know,
it's not like that. It's not an issue at all. I mean,
do they like you or do they dislike you?
They love us. So
all right,
we're actually.
I like you.
Oh, I like you too.
Okay, but why do they like you? Why should you know the Con Ed like you if you're cutting down on people's energy bills?
Well, I mean, so first of all, Con Ed, your energy bill is going to be in two components in New York City, right? It's going to be in delivery, and then the other half is in supply. Now, Con Ed owns delivery, full stop, because they own all the infrastructure. So they always have that. So that never changes. And supply is a deregulated market. Supply can be bid by anybody. So from that standpoint, it's fine. And Con Edison's big responsibility is to provide electricity to all of New York City. And because there's not enough supply, then they incent companies like ourselves and our customers to install and reduce, you know, install energy efficient upgrades and reduce demand on the grid. So we help reduce demand on their grid, which is something that's very important to them. Otherwise, the whole thing would, potentially just you'd have intermittent blackouts and it would all fall apart.
Yeah, we don't need any more blackouts in New York City.
Definitely not.
So how do you layer on top of this the so-called Internet of Things? Maybe we should define the Internet of Things because that term gets thrown around a lot. What is the Internet of Things? And then the follow-up question will be is, so now we got a grid and we have electricity going around, and now we're going to put the Internet on top of that. So start with the Internet of Things because I know my parents out on Long Island have no idea what that means.
Yeah, so, you know, the Internet, as we know, we can communicate with each other over computers, over video, over social media, email, that kind of thing. The Internet of Things means that now we can actually communicate with physical devices, whether it's your refrigerator in your house, whether it's a fan in an air conditioning unit, a thermostat, a light fixture. So physical objects. We call it the BIoT, the Building Internet of Things, which is in our space. So what we're doing is what's going on is there's a huge modernization effort in all these buildings around the world. Certainly here in the tri-state area, where you take old iconic buildings like the Chrysler Building or the Empire State Building or Rockefeller Center, all these places, and there's these modernization projects to where they're upgrading, and we're upgrading all of these components so that they're IP-enabled. This allows us to communicate with all of these systems and get analytics and control them and operate them in the most efficient manner possible. So, for example, if you had a fan or a VAV is what they call them. Let's just say a fan. Everybody knows what a fan is. So there's about 100 of them in the North Tower of the Chrysler Building, right? There's, you know, on different floors. So if you had one of them that failed, what you would have to do is you'd have to call the company that, you know, had that fan, the hardware manufacturer. They're going to charge a huge amount of money for that, right? That guy, they're going to send a service tech. That service tech has to go out there. They have to troubleshoot it. They have to figure what's going on. Hours, all billable. And then they have to diagnose the problem and then fix it. So we can.
They got to pay for parking too.
They got to pay for parking, and they're going to stick you with that. They're going to stick the customer.
That's the toughest part.
They'll probably stick the building with that.
With a Chrysler Building. Keep going.
Exactly. So the whole idea is now if these devices, we can communicate with them and control them, we can get diagnostics, we can program machine learning, we could take an 8-hour service call and break it down to 1 hour because we know exactly what's wrong with the machine. We know which fan is broken. We know why. We know where it is. We know what the diagnosis and the remedy is. So if you own these buildings, your net operating cost is going to have a direct value to the asset. So by reducing the net operating cost of these buildings, we're increasing the value of those assets.
So that's interesting. Talk about using your building as an asset. So, I mean, nobody thinks about the fans in your building, your HVAC system or lighting, unless there's a problem with it. No one cares about the refrigeration unit until it goes down. So how can your office be used as an asset? As a way to cut costs to boost the bottom lines. You know, talk about using your building, you know, as a way to, you know, to promote your business, to mine your business. That's the title of the show. There you go, Yitzchak.
So we tend to deal with the if you're talking about commercial real estate, we tend to deal with the large real estate investment trusts, right, or the REITs. So you know, these are companies like Tishman Speyer, Related, Vornado, all these guys who own millions and millions, hundreds of millions of square feet across the country. So for them, very often they'll charge their tenants electricity per square foot. So the tenant themselves may or may not care too much about that. It's the owners of the buildings who care, and the developers, because they're the ones who have to compete for tenants and for rents and everything else. So you have, in New York City, we have a massive real estate development project in Hudson Yards. It's on the west side of New York City.
They're building like a whole city over there.
It's like a whole city.
It is a whole city within the city.
That's right. So Related and Tishman Speyer, all these big REITs are in there building these massive buildings. These buildings are new, they're modern, there's tons of amenities.
And you're in there.
Absolutely.
You're the man.
So they're upgraded. These buildings are coming out of the box now. They're more efficient. They have these upgrades, the Internet of Things, meaning they're smart. They're smart buildings. You can control them. They're efficient. So older buildings that are iconic, like the Empire State Buildings and, you know, MetLife Building, all these older buildings, to keep up and to keep the value of their asset and to continue to, you know, justify the rents that they charge, they have to now modernize these buildings.
And how hard is it for you to go into the Empire State Building or the Chrysler Building or the Woolworth Building, these old school buildings? I keep thinking of Little Orphan Annie, you know, as high as the Chrysler Building. So how hard is it for you to go into these old buildings and modernize them? So once you break down your business, what portion of your business is new buildings, putting them up and making sure that, you know, the energy use and the Internet of Things is in there? And what portion of your business is modernizing these old buildings to make sure that they stay relevant, because they are competing against these new buildings in the Hudson Yards and in other places in the Northeast?
So what I would say is most of our business right now is in modernizing existing buildings. And that is just a bottomless pit of opportunity, because this is all new. This is a massive wave that is global. It's going to sweep through the planet over the next decade. So first of all, you have all these older buildings that need to be modernized. And a lot of these systems, these these air conditioning, these heating and cooling systems, they've been installed for decades. So, you know, they all are ripe for modernizing. Now, we do have the opportunity with some corn shell, well, I guess that's a new construction building, to have some pretty large new construction opportunities in the Hudson Yards, particularly, and with another large bank's new headquarters that's going to come up in a few years. So those are massive projects, and the great part about the new construction is that, you know, you get all the tenant fit-outs, you do all the modernization, you do the engineering, but then we have our own analytics platform, and then we end up, you know, having service and service contracts in the building for decades. So we end up, you know, monitoring, managing, maintaining those buildings through a combination of remote service engineers and an analytics platform, which is a software platform that, you know, helps, you know, do all that diagnosis I was talking about earlier with those fans.
Wait, so you're watching the buildings from a separate facility?
That's right. Like a NOC, like a network operations center, very similar to how you would manage a computer network. Now you basically, these are all like computer devices.
So basically you're almost back in the NSA. You know, you're watching the world and watching the Internet of Things and watching the heating control and the cooling control of the buildings from your headquarters. Where's your headquarters?
We have one in Manhattan and one in Dumbo in Brooklyn.
And everything is backed up, because that's the one thing that we learned from 9/11 is everything has to be backed up, correct?
Yeah, nowadays so much of this is on the cloud anyway, so you have that built-in redundancy and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
So how often should a building owner, a business owner in a building, take stock of his or her building? Kick their own tires, if you will. I mean, clearly you're watching, you're getting paid to watch buildings. But, you know, I mean, if someone's not using your services or someone's out there, they own a business, they're not thinking about, you know, the building, the heating until it goes off. How often should a CEO of a company mind their business? Once again, I love the title of this. Yitzhak nailed it with the title of this show. How often should they mind their business and take stock of their building?
Right. So there's something called, Mayor Bloomberg came up with something.
I remember that guy.
Called Local Law 87. Mm-hmm. And that was in about 2009. And basically what that means is that every building over 50,000 square feet in New York City would have to do what's called an ASHRAE Level 2 or Local Law 87 audit. So that what that basically means is that qualified people, something called a CEM, a Certified Energy Manager, has to go through those buildings and audit all the energy consumptive systems, whether it's a steam-based or electrical-based, heating, cooling, lighting, all these systems, and perform an energy analysis as well as a retro-commissioning and retro-commissioning sort of report and audit. So all these, this has been going on for some time. And as the years progress between now and sort of 2020, the penalties for not doing that, there's fines that they pay, go up and go up and go up. So all these buildings have to do it anyways, because of the city is, makes them do that. And then the second reason is, as I said, in order to compete with all these new buildings and new developments that are coming up, if you have an old building, you have to, it will behoove you to upgrade and modernize it.
All right, here's a question that I'm dying to know. Since I live in the city and I own real estate, I own my apartment in the city, there's a lot of empty stores out there. So I want to get your view. Look, you can ask any New Yorker. They'll give you their view of the real estate situation in New York. But, you know, they're still adding in the Hudson Yards. There's cranes up in Long Island City. And I apologize. You know, this is a national show. You can listen to us once again on the C-Suite Radio and NYBRadio.com. But, you know, in New York, they're building a lot. So with all the supply coming on, I have two questions for you. Once again, can the grid take it? Can is there enough electricity to put up a whole city within a city and keep adding those buildings in Brooklyn and Queens and Long Island City and even in Manhattan around the corner from me? So can the grid can take it? And also, you know, tell me about all the, you know, with all these buildings going up, you know, what's that mean for my property value? You might want to, I want to know the second question first, but you can start with the first question.
Yeah. Okay. So the first question, meaning the property value.
That's the second one. That's the important one. The first one
is the
island of Manhattan, or can these five boroughs withstand all these buildings that are going up?
And the answer is it's challenging. Yes, they can, but it's very critical that all these buildings adopt technologies that are energy efficient, such as demand response. So there's some microgrid technology that's involved. This basically means that you have certain parts of the building that can sustain their basically produce their own electricity. So by modernizing everything, that's the key for us to be able to do that. So the answer is, it's stressful and it's challenging even as it is now, but the technology is sort of there. We have the answers for how we can continue to grow.
So if everybody takes their air conditioner, because today it's if you're not in New York City, it's about 95 degrees out there and there's no wind. So if everyone takes their air conditioner and puts it on now, and then even more so when all these buildings come online, this city in New York will be able to withstand it, right? For those folks at home, you ought to see Luther's face right now. If you use ECS services, they will, right?
Yeah, basically.
There
no,
you go.
But no, it's definitely challenging. And you know what? It wouldn't be a surprise if there was another blackout. There is an issue. There's also issues potentially. I'm not saying anything specific about any specific utility, but there are
the pipes.
Yeah,
pipes breaking in Hoboken. There's pipes breaking in Gramercy Park.
And hacking, right? So the ability to hack into these systems. So there's a lot of energy, effort, and money being spent on trying to curtail demand, and that means reduce demand by putting energy efficient measures. B, trying to invest in new technologies that can produce more electricity and energy, and C, trying to protect and make more robust the existing infrastructure of the electricity. I don't think they're spending enough money on it, quite frankly.
All right. Now, am I screwed on my apartment? Is it because all the supply coming on, is my apartment going to be worth less and not going to be able to sell forever?
Where's your apartment?
I'm not giving that out on the radio. What kind of a code breaker are you? I got to keep my secrets, man.
No, I think that New York real estate is is very valuable.
Oh,
it's
there
gonna,
you
it's
go.
Going to continue to be very valuable simply because there's just not enough of it.
All right. I've been speaking with Luther Garcia. He's the president of ECS Global, and the ECS stands for Energy Conservation and Supply. So they'll supply your energy, and they'll help you conserve as well. How do you win new business over at ECS? What's your approach?
So customer acquisition in our industry is very interesting. So first of all, we are partnered with one of the biggest companies out there that provides this type of heating and cooling and this type of hardware. And it's called Schneider Electric. So there's really sort of four main players in this. One is Honeywell, the other one is Johnson Controls, Siemens, and then Schneider Electric. They're like a $20 billion company from France. So we are a Schneider Electric service partner for New York City. So that helps a lot. So what that means is we get a lot of indirect channel sale opportunities by being specified as the building management system control spec by all these mechanical contractors and system integrators that are part of the Schneider Electric ecosystem. So the indirect model we're very, very fond of. The second thing that we do is we focus on portfolio companies. So our direct sale targets are companies that own portfolios of buildings. So the whole idea is there's lots of opportunity, and then there will be lots of recurring revenue ongoing as we win more and more properties in those portfolios. So,
and you are primarily, if not all, commercial. You're not doing homes, right?
So we really have two businesses. One is
no residential. Do you do some residential?
So we do some multifamily. So residential outside of New York City, no. Multifamily, like a 600,000 or 700,000 square foot apartment condo in New York City, absolutely.
So what should people, once again, this is a business show, so we've been talking about how business owners should take care of their buildings, but people live in homes, even business owners. So talk about people and their homes and how they can lower their energy bills. Maybe they can use some services out there, switch to LED lighting. Talk about how so your everyday homeowner can save money.
Absolutely. So the biggest thing is lighting is low-hanging fruit. We call lighting like the gateway drug to sustainability. It's very linear in terms of the return on investment, right? If you exchange a 50-watt lamp with a 6-watt lamp, then you know that you've...
Is this an SAT question?
it's very linear. You can see how much that you're saving if you know how much you're paying for electricity and how many hours you operate it. The other thing is to add controls to your lighting. So add dimming, right? So add controls to both your air conditioning. Those are smart thermostats. So rather than just running the air conditioning all summer long, you can set a temperature. And, it'll run when it hits that temperature, and it'll stop when that temperature is reached. So combination of being able to control your lighting, you can dim it and you can turn it higher up, and being able to control your air conditioning. These are really easy things that anybody could do.
You can do them on your phone now, right?
Nowadays, you can.
You have all these services where you can do control the temperature on your phone, everything on the phone.
Echobee is one that's very common. You get these Echobee sort of smart thermostats. They're not expensive. There's a lot of different ones that are out there. And if you want to go really crazy, they've actually implemented blockchain.
Are we going to get into crypto?
Yeah.
Am I going to be trading Bitcoin on my air conditioning?
Not so much Bitcoin, but electricity. So they have it now where you could actually have a smart thermostat that uses blockchain technology to dynamically buy your electricity through this whole blockchain system. So you could go crazy like that if you want to, or just...
It's a bit too crazy. Let me tell you why it's...
I suggested.
Let me tell you why it's too crazy for me. When I was growing up, my father would not let us near the thermostat. I mean, it was like, in the James Bond movie, Since You're a Codebreaker, they always have that one button that detonates the place. The whole island of Dr. No is going to blow up if you hit that button.
Yeah.
Exactly. So in my house, growing up in Westbury, Long Island, the thermostat was that button. So nobody was allowed to touch that thermostat. Otherwise, my dad would know, and then the whole house would blow. So even when I became a homeowner, I would look at that thermostat and I'd say, I ain't touching that thing because the whole place is going to blow up. And people would say, it's hot or it's cold in here. And I have no idea about temperature. I know when it's too hot or it's too cold, but I could not set a thermostat for my life because it would have cost me my life growing up.
Right. So that's why, having a smart thermostat is a really easy way around it. And, the two governing factors that control your heat and your comfort are really, there's the temperature, but then there's the humidity, right? So that's kind
of... Now, the two governing factors that control the heat in my life are my wife and my kids, right? My wife
that's
says,
a fair point.
She says it's too cold in here. My kids say it's too hot. So, all right. So let's talk a little bit. You mentioned when we were talking about how you get business, you mentioned contractors. And when people think of contractors, they think about the guy that started working on their living room and never came back after 3 weeks. So talk about how you work with contractors.
Yeah. So we have a combination of two ways. One is a mechanical engineering company that, provides hardware and mechanical engineering service will subcontract us to do the programming and all the controls base work. Then we also will subcontract ourselves underneath us, electrical contractors, high voltage electrical contractors. So these are basically electricians that we will contract, union, non-union. It gets a little sticky and tricky depending on whether it's a union or non-union, prevailing wage, all these issues that you have to deal with. So we deal with contractors both as a subcontractor and as kind of a general contractor that subcontracts labor as well. So the most important thing that we found is that, no offense to anybody, but the things that many...
You can offend people. It's fine. I'm sitting in for Yitzchak. Yeah. He's going to have to take the heat if you offend anyone. Please offend so many people. We get higher ratings that way.
Well, very often these electrical contractors aren't great at things like program management, project development, you know. So these are the things that's part of our special sauce that we manage and we handle. So then they just have to do specific tasks, but we manage, you know, the whole project so we don't fall behind and so the customer remains happy.
So here's a big question, though, is, you know, I guess are contractors now going to need to know more about the Internet of Things? So, for example, when you bring your car in, it used to be, fix the carburetor, fix the transmission, fix the brakes, fix the tires. Now it's, we need to fix the computer. So now when you deal with contractors or when you hire at ECS, do you need to have people that are computer capable, that are computer literate, that can code, that can have the refrigerator speak to the light, to the light switch?
Absolutely. So yeah, that's exactly the kind of people we hire at ECS. So we have to be able to do that. From some of the other contractors, they're just taking one piece of hardware and replacing it with another one. So it's not too important to them. All the networking and all that stuff, that's kind of the stuff we handle. So from our standpoint, that's kind of the opportunity that's there for us. And we do. We have software developers. We have, remote service engineers. We have system engineers. So we hire engineers.
Now, here's another thing about building in the city. Attaching the apartment next to mine to mine. We bought that apartment and we built out, right? And just to put a hole in the wall, we had to go through City Hall. We had to get expediters. I didn't even know what an expediter was, but we paid an expediter. So talk about, if you don't mind, how you deal with the government. I mean, you must have to deal with City Hall all the time just to make sure that these buildings are up to code. You need those codes. Otherwise, people are just going to be putting things in Manhattan wherever they want. I mean, that's why your super always comes up and says, nope, you can't do that. You need the city to sign off on that. I understand that. It kind of impedes the building process when the government gets involved. Probably impedes your business at some point. So talk about how you work with City Hall.
Yeah, to be honest with you, we don't that much. I mean, it depends on the type of work that you're doing. If it's a new construction opportunity, then there's a lot more of permits that need to be pulled and that sort of thing. Sometimes there are permits that need to be pulled, but generally, if you're replacing an existing piece of hardware with just kind of upgrading it with a new piece of hardware, that's not really going to require a lot of red tape from City Hall. So it's not a huge impact to our business.
Okay, so let's move ahead a little bit. Let's talk about the future. So when I was growing up, I was a big fan of the Jetsons, and then, you see these houses, they were up in space, but now we have a lot of the things that George Jetson was looking at. You're speaking to people on TV, like his boss and Judy and Elroy, he knows exactly where they are. And all those things came to fruition. The future came true to a certain extent, the way they imagined it back then. So, And these things happened. So talk about where you see the future of building going. So what's going to happen, not for my kids, but their kids' generation? Sure. What's the building of the future going to look like?
So the big things that are going on, the big innovations that are going on, in my opinion, in this order, are artificial intelligence, quantum computing, and automation.
All right, let's take those one by one. Start with the AI.
Okay, so right now with our analytics platform, we have some machine learning that we are incorporating into our programs. So that basically means we can take what a remote service engineer would do manually and we could put it in software so that the software can do it automatically. What's going to happen is as that evolves, that's going to become more intelligent, artificially intelligent, beyond just machine learning. And it's going to marry with automation, so potentially robots and things like this. So these buildings will be self-healing. So
self-healing buildings.
Absolutely. So the whole idea is...
Love it.
Yeah. I mean, some of the union labor might not love it, but that's what's going to happen, I think, is there's going to be a huge replacement of human labor all over the place, whether it's self-driving cars or whether it's anything that doesn't require a lot of imagination, I think is going to be able to be automated and replaced by artificial intelligence and automation, some combination. So that's where I see buildings going, and I think that they're going to be hugely efficient, not only efficient, but there's going to be a lot of batteries and solar and microgrid technology that's going to be integrated, so they're going to be hugely not only energy efficient, but have an ability to generate their own power much more so to a degree than they do today. So I think that's where the future is. Then if you add quantum computing to it, that's really...
Quantum computing. I mean, look, you know, you're talking about quantum computing and people are thinking about HVAC. They're thinking of a guy who comes in with a big plumber's crack in his butt. They could see, you know, drinking a beer, saying, all right, you know, I got to fix the air conditioning where? And you're talking about quantum computing. Explain how quantum computing is going to affect my grandkid's house.
Okay, so basically quantum computing, the way computing works today is you have zeros and ones, right? It's binary. That means it's either on or off, it's true, it's false, it's yes or no. And those are bits, and we put a bunch of them together. And, you know, it's one bit at a time. It's on or off, right? So quantum computing, much like quantum physics, means that they have something, it's called a qubit. So instead of a bit, it's a qubit. So the qubit can be exist in two states at once, both on and off. What that means is that a quantum computer that had, say, 32 qubits would equal or be greater than all of the computing power that we have today on Earth combined.
Wow.
So what that's going to do is, you know how you have these little fobs maybe for your bank where you have this little code, these little one-time passwords, all these sorts of things.
I got too many passwords. I love a one-time password. I can't remember them all, but keep going. Yes.
Way too many passwords. Well, all the security would be out the door. Things that cost would take 1,000 years for a computer to break today, encryption, a quantum computer with enough qubits could probably do in 3 or 4 seconds. So all the security would change completely. Artificial intelligence, what you could do with AI on a processor that is, you know, based on these bits, the way we have it today, true-false versus based on qubit-based quantum computing, that takes it to another level. It's actually very scary. So integrating that kind of stuff in everything that we do for artificial intelligence, how you run, whether it's a building or anything in your life, it's going to be a massive leap forward. And it's coming, I think, in the next sort of 20 years or so. They're working on it now.
All right. It's the Jetsons. It all comes back to the Jetsons.
We've
been speaking with Luther Garcia. He is the President and CEO of ECS Global, and that stands for Energy Conservation and Supply. We've been talking about how to save money in your home with your energy, how to save money on your building with your energy, how to use your building as an asset. Very important. All right, so we've been talking about the buildings of the future. Let's talk about the buildings of now. So what kind of calls do you get now from buildings? You know, what kind of challenges do you face now? I know you're trying to turn old buildings and make them more energy efficient. So where are some of the biggest challenges that you're finding when you get a call?
Yeah, so I mean, I guess the basic thing that we're doing right now is, again, there's just a massive wave of modernization going on in terms of building automation.
Why not just knock those old buildings? I guess, you know, you can't, some of them historical landmarks, you just can't knock the Empire State Building down. But what's better in your view, new buildings, old buildings?
I love both. You know, the new buildings are great. I mean, from our standpoint, it's kind of a similar thing. You know, we love modernizing these buildings. It's not that hard. You're replacing these mechanical widgets with basically upgraded, smarter mechanical widgets. It's not that difficult. It's a lot cheaper than knocking down a building and then building it back.
I guess here's the reason why I ask. I don't want to seem callous. That, you know, I like, oh, I want to replace all that grand old Art Deco architecture. You know, but you know, I traveled to Dubai last year, they have is they have unlimited space. So the architecture they put up there, it's a brand new building. They just dream it and they build it. Buildings that twist, buildings that move, all
it's
glass,
amazing.
All steel. It's absolutely amazing. And then when you come to New York, you see that these people who are putting up buildings in the middle of this island of Manhattan, how hard they have to work, because it's like doing surgery, open heart surgery on a moving patient because they have to work around traffic. And you see it especially when you go out to LaGuardia. They're rebuilding LaGuardia yep. Airport. And I apologize to our listeners all around the country and around the world that I sound too much of like a homer. But when you fly into LaGuardia Airport and you see the construction going on and the traffic jams and the things that these builders have to do not to just stop the entire city, to stop the entire Northern State Expressway, it really is amazing. So what, if you wouldn't mind, just comment on that. How do you work on a building when it still has to be used?
Right. So that's exactly right. So I was in Dubai, you know, in 1990, 91, probably 91, I guess. And it did not look like that.
No.
So just about every one of those buildings has been built in the last sort of 20 years, 18 years, you know, whatever.
And they weren't worrying about City Hall either, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they didn't worry about that, right? The Sheikh of Dubai,
They need expediters to run down to get an approval from City Hall. But keep going, I apologize.
Yeah, no, so the Sheikh of Dubai, he just basically puts out a pot of gold and he attracts the most, you know, innovative architects and construction companies all over the world to just go nuts and go mad. So they did that. So these other buildings, you know, when the Chrysler Building and the Empire State Building, you know, those were built, you know, 100 years ago or however, it's like so long ago. That, you know, obviously with time, we can't just, we don't have that luxury, right? And obviously we have such limited space on this little island we live on, that's also a challenge. So for me, that's also the opportunity, right? So now you have all these buildings that are old, that are iconic, that, you know, have been in movies and that have been in the New York skyline that are very, just, you see it in like, well, I'm in a plane and I'll look out the window and I'll see, you know, the MetLife Building or the, you know, Chrysler Building or whatever else. And I know that I'm coming home. You know, you see these buildings, so they're great and they're iconic, but it's like you say, they're old.
Yeah.
So there's a huge amount of money that is being spent and that needs to be spent to upgrade all aspects of these buildings. And from our standpoint, you know, we're happy to help them do it.
All right. And how are you getting the word out? I mean, hey, it's great. You came on WABC with me and you're getting the word out here. You're on the C-Suite Network,
yeah.
I'm a host of the C-Suite Network. So you're on Apple and Roku and you're in all those, you know, platforms for all the cord cutters out there and also you're online, but talk about how you're getting the word out.
So, you know, we actually have a really nice PR company that we work with called Tallgrass PR.
There's a plug. There you go.
Yeah, just hooking them up. But also, so what we're doing is because, you know, there's a lot of opportunity. It's an exciting space. You know, we have ambitious and aggressive plans for how we want to grow our business by buying other companies and stuff like that. We're working with Tallgrass to really start or maintain and develop a really aggressive PR campaign that shows the types of investors and, you know, it's not so much about the customers because, you know, the customer acquisition strategy is a little bit different. That's going to be based on, you know,
and you're
inside relationships with, you know, in New York City and across the country. But through social networking, we really want to increase and expand that through things like LinkedIn and on Twitter and things like that. Right now, it's not as developed as it should be, but that's largely because a lot of what we're doing, we can't broadcast it this year. But next year, when all these huge projects are done, we'll be able to have these joint press releases with these enormous companies and these enormous iconic buildings. And that's when we're really going to be able to have some make.
But you're growing very quickly. I think you were named on the Inc. list of the fastest 5,000 companies. So, I mean, you do realize why you're on here. So, I mean,
absolutely.
Because you're doing
yeah.
good, kid.
Absolutely.
So why don't you talk about how you got on that list and what that list means? Because and talk about your growth and how you manage that growth, because it's not easy growing that quickly, you know, and Tell me how you're managing the growth and
right.
talk about this list that you made.
Yeah,
it's always nice to make a list.
It's always nice to make a list. I mean, I was a little perturbed that I was like that we were 2,600 something or other. So I haven't been broadcasting it because it almost.
But with
makes
a bullet,
me,
right? 2,600 with a bullet.
It kind of makes me laugh. But look, when you consider that the first year in 2013 when we bought ECS, we did $2.3 billion in sales, and this year we'll do about $38 million. That's pretty impressive growth over a sort of a 6-year span. Our fiscal year goes from July 1st to June 30th. But, you know, one of the things that we're doing is we actually have two businesses. So we're actually in the process of splitting them. So the building intelligence business will be a separate entity from the lighting business, which is a little bit more more established. And the lighting business has been doing a great job for a long time, continues to grow. We're sort of at the peak in terms of LED lighting adoption. I don't know how long that peak's going to last, but it's doing really, really well. On the other hand, the building intelligence business, that thing is exploding now. And, you know,
Who else is in the building intelligence business?
Well, so there's probably about 20 companies in this area, New York City, which would be the biggest area market for this kind of thing in the country. There's about 20 of us who could go after the type of projects and buildings that we do. I'm not going to plug a single one of them.
No, you don't have to.
I'll tell you, there's one everybody knows, Alberio, or, you know, Alberio's one. You know, they're north of 100 million in sales. They're growing aggressively through, you know, acquisition, that kind of thing.
But how tough is it to get a building? Look, you're putting up a big building in the Hudson Yards. Look, how tough does the bidding have to get for you to get that building? I mean, it must be very competitive. And so talk about how you win a bid. I mean, you know, you got to take these guys out to ball games, or does it just all come down to price?
Yeah, no, it really comes. Price is going to be the main factor. You know, you have to be very careful with, you know, how
you got to have a sharp pencil.
You have to have a sharp pencil. You know, the hospitality and all that's a lot of these guys aren't really even allowed to receive that kind of stuff in terms of even taking them out to dinner. So it's not about that. You know, it's a comment. We have to be smarter than our competitors. We have to be better than they are. A lot of these older mechanical or BMS, building management system companies, controls companies, you know, not all of them are as innovative as we are, quite frankly. We have our own bespoke and custom or proprietary data analytics platform that can be used in any building. And then we have an impressive portfolio of buildings and projects that we've won. So you have to have a track record to be able to win these type of buildings. And getting your first one is always the toughest. But, you know, the partnership that we have with Schneider Electric is a key for us to win. So as long as we do a good job and do good by them, we'll continue to get more opportunities.
All right. Now, here's the thing. So times are good in New York. Interest rates are low. Cranes are going up. There's a lot of building going on. However, there's always a cycle to real estate. You know, you've read, A Man in Full, the Tom Wolfe book. And, you know,
sure,
when things turn down, you know, people think, especially, for example, down in Texas, when they put up these big buildings like they did in Dubai because oil prices are high, and then oil prices plummet, and they got there's no buildings, no one wants them. You have a lot of white elephants out there. So talk about how you manage the cycle, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, so the beauty of what we do is that because a lot of it is return on investment, ROI-based,
I love the fact that you're giving me the acronyms.
Right. Return on investment. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure. So
trained you well.
One way to, if you're not growing your sales, one way to, you know, increase your profitability is to reduce your net operating costs. So a lot of what we do helps for that. So in times of recession, you know, very often that's the only thing that people could do. The difference is maybe some of the financing options aren't available, but most of the clients we deal with have so much money because they're large real estate trusts and things like that, and they have so many assets, they can invest in things that are going to make more profit or make their assets more profitable. That's the first thing. So we're kind of recession proof. The second thing is that when we're managing, operating, and servicing these buildings, if the air conditioning goes out, they're not going to not replace that, or they'll lose tenants.
Right.
You know. So from that standpoint, I think it's okay. The difference is, you know, going through existing buildings, that's a bottomless pit of opportunity because this is just beginning. So if there was a cycle in real estate, maybe some of the new construction would be affected. But to build these skyscrapers, that takes years. So these things are already, you know, there's a sort of an inertia with them. So they're already moving, and it's very hard to stop that.
What is your view? There was an article in the New York Times this past week, and I encounter this every single day just walking down the block. What is your view of all these vacancies on New York City streets? And it's actually, I'm being Northeast centric, but it's all across America. You walk down any block or any strip mall, and there are just vacancies in commercial places. Some people say it's Amazon.com is putting small business out of business. You know, other people say, well, it's higher rents. Some people say it's a combination of the two. So as someone who's really knows the real estate market so well, you tell me what's going to be going into a lot of these open commercial real estate spaces.
Yeah, it's a huge challenge. And
does that affect your business?
Not so much.
Okay, but I still want your opinion.
As a New Yorker, though, it affects my life, right? Because one of the great things about this city are places like these mom and pop shops. It'd be incredible restaurants or butchers or, you know, cobblers, whatever. And the rent starts going up that those guys have to close down or move out because they can't afford it, or maybe they have to move uptown. That is a problem, and it's something that's absolutely not just affecting New York City, but it's affecting everywhere across the country. Now, we have a lot of large retail chains that we do work for nationally on the lighting side. And some of them, for example, if you look at, and we don't really do so much with Hudson Bay Company now, but Lord & Taylor, for example, they actually sold $750 million. They sold their flagship store on Fifth Avenue. They sold it to WeWork.
Yep.
So WeWork, anything that you can generate revenue and not have to, you know, put strain on your cash flow, those are the kinds of businesses that are going to be able to operate down there. So you have to figure out what those are.
So now that's another big trend that you brought up. I was going to bring it up. It shows you, you know, once I hate it when people have my ideas before me, but is the fact that a lot of these big old buildings are turning into WeWorks and places where people are going to gather for their own business, and they'll bring their laptops in. Maybe they'll have five or six employees, and they'll work out of a shared space. How does this affect your business? And is that simply just the way that the world is heading? People are going to be in this new gig economy where everyone is their own boss, has their own company, their own business card. They're going to go out and they're going to work out of a WeWork. And how does that affect your business? Is that good? Because
first of all,
people like to save energy in a WeWork building.
First of all, you brought it up. WeWork's one of our customers. We love WeWork. They're fantastic. And I love what they do, not just because of
set
their
that plug
model.
Up, didn't I?
Right. You set them up, I'll knock them down.
All right.
WeWork's great because they really make it easy for entrepreneurs to incubate ideas and companies, and they can actually be with that company from the time they're small. They have enterprise deals, so you can do enterprise deals with them, they get bigger. And the fact that they're so forward-thinking and innovative means that they want their spaces to be as energy efficient as possible. So they're the perfect customer for us, and we're the perfect partner for them. We love WeWork.
So this is another trend. Millennials. You're going to be dealing more and more with millennials, and millennials they're more conscious of the environment, perhaps.
So, that's
true.
Why don't you
talk about this new generation and what they're looking for in a building?
So for me, it's I deal with them less about what they're looking for in a building, and more that a lot of them work for me. So I think that millennials are interesting. I think there's some bad rap, and you know, maybe they've had some bad press that's unfair. I find them to be very socially conscious, but I also find them, you know, to be very open-minded. They are very, you know, easy to adopt technology. So in terms of millennials working for me, some of the best people we have are millennials, and so we like them there. In terms of that whole social conscious, or, you know,
environmentally conscious,
yeah, not so much socially, environmentally conscious issues, you know, look, that's only good for all of us going forward in terms of the environment, and anyone that has a business that's all about, you know, making energy efficient or providing energy efficient solutions, that's a beautiful thing. The more demand there is for that, the better that is for all of us, and you know, the better it is for our environment and the planet we live on. So it's a good thing.
All right, so once again, we've been speaking with Luther Garcia. He is the president and CEO of ECS Global, stands for Energy Conservation and Supply. I like to give the entire acronym, right? I like to spell it out for you. All right, so finally, tell me a little bit more about ECS, where you plan to take the company over the next few years. Give me the strategy.
Yeah, so the strategy is to continue to our customer acquisition strategy on the organic growth side, continue winning large portfolios of buildings from some of these large property management companies and real estate investment trusts. And then in the next sort of year or two, I think we're going to start acquiring companies.
How do you know? I mean, your background, you have some M&A in there in your background. And we did it at the very top of the show. We talked about all the companies you've bought and sold. How do you know when a company is right to buy or sell?
The biggest thing is you have to evaluate their assets, and you have to see if those assets, you want them on your balance sheet. And particular in our business, these are long-term contracts, long-term service contracts that will provide either opening into another real estate investment trust or portfolio of buildings, or B, these service contracts become assets and give us an opportunity potentially to develop and expand our analytics platform, which provides recurring revenue, high margin, and analytics companies are currently trading at about 40 times EBIT. So from our standpoint, it's going to be our strategy is all about growing the most valuable aspects of our business so that we can increase shareholder value to the maximum through a combination of organic growth, as we've set up kind of the strategy we set out earlier, and acquiring the right companies that can also help us expand our software platform, and B, acquire more service contracts, because those are very valuable assets.
All right. So finally, I want to find out about your building. So we've spoken about all the buildings that you're putting up. So in your building over at ECS, talk about how you manage your building.
Yeah. So one of the buildings that we have is in Dumbo, and there's a company called Two Trees.
Dumbo means
Down Under Manhattan Bridge Overpass.
Thank you.
So that's in Brooklyn. It's really right over the Brooklyn Bridge or the Manhattan Bridge,
where the hip people live with their hats and their beards.
Yes, it's very, very becoming very beatnik.
Too hip for us.
Too hipster.
Really for me. You seem pretty.
No,
hip.
It's okay. Just too hip for me. Yeah.
Okay. So tell me about your offices.
Yeah, so our offices, are smart offices. So obviously we have LED fixtures. They're all controlled. They're all on. They have motion sensors. We have smart thermostats that, we can control through our phone, a couple of us. We don't let everybody control the thermostat, a bit like your father. And, because someone's going to be too cold, and then they're going to turn the air conditioning off, or someone's going to be too hot.
It's a war you'll never win.
Oh, I lose it. My wife wins that war.
Yeah.
She's always cold. I'm always too hot. We've just done the simple things that we can do in our office.
You practice what you preach.
We eat our own dog food.
Well, listen, this has been fantastic. Thank you for coming on WABC Radio 77 in the greater New York metropolitan area. People can also hear this on MYB Radio. This is Mind Your Business. I'm Greg Greenberg. I've been sitting in for Yitzhak Soflis, and I've been speaking to Luther Garcia. It's been a great conversation, and thanks a lot for coming
on,
Luther.
Thanks, Greg.
77 WABC Radio presents Mind Your Business, hosted by founder and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Soflis. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday night for this intriguing weekly radio show that's chock full of business insights and marketing strategies that will help you get ahead of the game. Host Yitzhak Soflis has been producing pioneering and creative marketing work for over two decades. He leads a team of marketing experts who help their clients build their brands and grow their businesses. Now, he and his guests offer their business and marketing expertise to you every Sunday night on Mind Your Business.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.